Good morning, good people. This is Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take. And we're back in the studio talking with Masonia Traylor about the National Black HIV AIDS Awareness Day, which is tomorrow, February 7th, that kicks off the National Black HIV AIDS Awareness Week. Masonia, thank you so much for coming and sharing with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Masonia, before we get started, I want our listeners to know that you're here because you are HIV positive.
Yes, and I've been positive for 5 years now.
And as a woman, before you contracted HIV/AIDS, how much were you aware of women's vulnerability to the virus?
I guess I would like to say that when I think about HIV or AIDS, I have made it where it was never gender based. It was always something that could happen to anyone. So I never looked at it as just, oh, it only happens to men or it only happens to women. Although in media and the way that it's portrayed, you rarely hear about women and HIV. You only hear about gay black men or men who have sex with men and HIV/AIDS.
So tell us your story. How did you come about contracting the virus? What was your reaction when you found out that you had contracted it? And what is your life like now?
Okay. So I was diagnosed HIV positive at 23 years old in late 2010. 2 weeks after my diagnosis, I also found out that I was pregnant. I had been educated about HIV through a speakers bureau where a young lady came to my high school to talk about HIV, and she disclosed her AIDS status at that time. And that was about 10, 11 years ago. And so I made a conscious decision in high school that I wanted to be tested annually. This was prior to CDC making that recommendation. Now, as far as me receiving a positive diagnosis, I had never imagined it ever coming back as reactive. I always understood HIV as something that could happen to anyone, but not necessarily so close to home, because usually with someone who had promiscuous behaviors, such as multiple partners, someone who wasn't in a committed relationship, someone who had tattoos and indulged in sex and drugs and any type of high risk behaviors. And I didn't have any of those. I didn't fit that description. So for me, my diagnosis was traumatizing. It was devastating. And to not only be HIV positive, but also to find out 2 weeks later that I was pregnant, it made me realize how selfish I was and not thinking about the next generation when it came to this. But once I received my diagnosis, and prior to, I had always been advocating. As soon as I would go get tested for HIV, I would go back and encourage my friends. But one of the things that I did notice from my HIV diagnosis is that I was in private healthcare and my doctor did not see me as at risk. I was very close to my doctor. I had been with them since I started my woman time at age 11. And I knew that I could talk to my doctor about anything, even if I was afraid to speak to my mother. And when I requested an HIV test this particular year, my doctor asked, why? I said, I just want to be tested for everything. I do it every year. And once I get tested, I go back and I encourage my friends. It's something that I've always done. My friends are doing way more than I'm interested in, but I think that I can't encourage them without setting the example. So when I asked her for the test, she immediately asked, are you showing any symptoms or anything like that? And I said, no symptoms. It's just that a young lady had on a t-shirt that said, I have HIV when I was in Florida. And on the back of the shirt, it said, if only it was just that easy to tell, get tested. That prompted me to say, you know what? I hadn't been tested this year. But that particular year was also the year that I got dropped from my mother's insurance, because once you turn 23, you would get dropped. And they had just switched the policy that same year where they extended it to age 26. So I was one of those individuals that fell into that loophole, that gap, as they were changing the policy. But I did not think that HIV would have infected me. This young college educated woman who is of low income, single parent household, but very well educated about how HIV is transmitted. But I was very unaware of how prevalent the rates were of HIV here in Atlanta. I did not know how prevalent HIV was and how many people were developing an AIDS diagnosis. I was very unaware and I was very upset to find that out. And I still feel like at this point we have organizations like Black Women's Health Imperative that's helping us put this on the forefront, where we're understanding that, you know what, we cannot remain complacent about this. This is something that's truly happening within our households.
And Ms. Sonia, you said something very important. You said that anyone can contract HIV. And I'm sure there's some of our listeners that are listening right now who heard some of the things when HIV and AIDS was first discovered, and they blame the victim. They say it's because of your behavior, whether it was one time or half a time, that this is God's choice for your life because of what you did. How do you respond to that kind of thought? How do you respond to people who believe that?
I think that when we're looking at HIV or an AIDS diagnosis, we often try to separate HIV from other health disparities. So when a person gets a diagnosis like cancer, are they being punished? If they're getting a diagnosis like diabetes, are they being punished? I have a friend whose newborn baby just passed away from cancer, from leukemia. Was that child punished? Was that mother and father punished? So HIV is simple. It stands for human immunodeficiency virus. No matter how you choose to look at a risk behavior, you're still at risk as long as you're human. It doesn't matter. And that's one thing that I learned. It did not matter how low risk I was from being in a committed relationship. I was still at risk simply because of where I lived, just because of the prevalence and being unaware of how prevalent it was. I think that the way that we look at HIV and saying, you know, well, it's a curse. Well, last time I checked, I think I haven't done anything to anyone to bring harm their way. And if it was such a curse, why am I still living with this virus? So I think that when people are choosing not to be mindful of the words that they use when approaching HIV AIDS, that creates more stigma in the community, and it creates a tone where we're saying we don't care if HIV is here. We don't care if more people continue to get infected. That's their problem. When it's actually somebody that could be sitting next to you, someone living in your house, someone that you care about dearly, that's terrified of telling you anything in regards to an HIV AIDS diagnosis simply because of you made light of the situation.
And Ms. Sonia, you mentioned that word stigma. And in our community, which is very conservative, sex is sometimes even a stigma. Just to talk about healthy sexual relationships, it's hard to find those conversations. Do you think that's part of the challenge in educating women seriously about the risks they face?
I think what's a challenge is that HIV AIDS has been around for 35 years. And I think that we have a lot of people out here who think they know it all. I realize that when I do speak to people who are unaware of my HIV status, they're less likely to listen to me when I'm speaking, as opposed to someone who does know that I'm infected with the virus. I think people become a lot more open and willing to learn when they're speaking to someone who is living with the diagnosis. Another thing that I've noticed is that there's an intergenerational gap going on. You have grandmothers and grandchildren who are both infected with the virus, and maybe the mother in between is not. There's a disconnect in the communication. There's a disconnect in the way that youth perceive HIV today versus what it was in the 90s, because there are silent deaths that are happening around HIV AIDS. There are people who develop AIDS and you don't know it because they've had it for, I don't know, maybe 3 to 5 years and never went back to get treated for their diagnosis. So when I look at the history behind HIV and how much research has been done and how far we've come, with the simple fact that I birthed an HIV negative baby and I'm HIV positive, I think that we've done a disservice to our community by not making sure that research ends up in school books, not just saying that HIV AIDS is a sexually transmitted disease that you can get and it's treatable, and then if you don't treat it, you will die. Give more information about the basics of HIV. It's something simple as viral load and T cell count. How much of the virus is in a person's system? How many T cells does a person need in their body in order to stay alive? Those are things that we have to learn as patients. Why not learn that as just a loved one to be able to give that support? Now, one of the things that I did want to mention is that being HIV positive and looking at PrEP. Initially, I was apprehensive about it, just kind of looking at it like, well, why would I need or want that in my life? I don't even enjoy taking the HIV meds that I have now. And when I look at PrEP now, I look at it as an opportunity to not only have hope in a relationship where I'm in a serodiscordant relationship where I'm HIV positive and my partner may be HIV negative. If I choose to have another child, what does that mean for my partner? What does that mean for him? When I look at some of my male friends that are HIV positive but would like to be in a relationship with a woman who's HIV negative, what does that mean for them, for that woman, to say, you know what, I can be accountable for not getting HIV or AIDS, not contracting this virus. I have an opportunity to protect myself in another way. I think that is amazing. I think it's a wonderful approach. But when I also look at the history of HIV and where people want to blame, they say to me, well, don't you know that that person can be locked up for infecting you? I think our community forgets that we have a responsibility ourselves. I had a choice at the end of the day. It is not all that person's fault who infected me. I have to take responsibility too, because I always have opportunity to protect myself. I can't assume that I just know this person's status. I cannot blame them because I chose to be ignorant or that I chose to be oblivious towards someone that I care about and that I love. And since they love and they care about me, they love me and care about me more than I love and care about myself.
Tell our listeners some of the myths about living with HIV, because I remember people, again, my generation, older than you, from the 80s and the 90s, when people who had HIV, you could look at someone and tell it's something wrong, they're sick. You're a beautiful young girl. There is no way anyone would look at you and think that you were sick or that you had a virus. Is that part of the challenge? Because you can't look at things and situations and say, oh, that's bad. Sometimes you don't know until you get in it. So what are some of the myths that people are still believing about life with HIV that your life disproves? Because you look healthy, you look happy, you're still contributing to society, you're talking with your friends. I think people think if I get HIV, I'm going to go live under a rock in a corner and, you know, no one will know and it'll never enter the public domain. And I think that's how we think of people surviving with HIV. I think that's why it's hard. Like you said, you believe people when they present themselves to you as healthy. There's no way you would go, well, no, I know you're not healthy because you've got blisters on your skin or you've got this or you've got that. What are some of those myths that are just not true?
I think it's interesting how living with HIV has curved some of my perspectives. Well, not just living with it, being an advocate, being a youth advocate in particular, when I'm speaking to people under 30 years old. And when I speak to those individuals and I want to empower them, I realize that I have a creative thin line where I have to find a way to scare you and make you comfortable at the same time. That is a huge challenge, because it's like, I want to say, hey, I want you to be afraid. I want you to be aware so you can make a healthier decision to take ownership and say, you know what, we don't have to continue to get more HIV infections in our community. Yet still, I don't want you to be so afraid that you are saying to yourself, I would never be in a relationship with someone who has HIV or AIDS. That is very unique within itself. When I understand that people see me as healthy and happy now, I also am reminded that you didn't see what I went through behind closed doors before I decided to disclose my status. You didn't see the heartache, the stress, the arguments, the unhealthy side, the fights with the doctors about taking the medicine, and looking at the myths that, you know, oh, there's a cure out there and that they're just holding it back so that we can just keep getting it. Well, this can be twofolded. For those that are HIV negative, I want you to stay HIV negative. That means so much to me. It lets me know that my work is not going in vain. And if you're HIV positive, I want you to own that and understand that you now have the opportunity to protect somebody else from getting it. Yes, somebody may have infected you, but it doesn't have to continue. It doesn't. It can stop just right there. I think that some of the stigma behind it does center around the fact that I look healthy and I'm happy. Yes, I am healthy. I'm healthy because I am adherent to my medications. I eat healthily. My lifestyle has not changed in the sense of how I've taken care of myself prior to my diagnosis. But the healthiest part about me is my mental state. My emotional and my spiritual well-being comes first. When I lose weight, people say, oh my God, are you sick? Are you okay? And I was like, nah, I'm about 30 pounds over where I was about 3 years ago. You just didn't notice because this is muscle mass and it just looked like thickness to you, you know? But it's actually, I'm having a tough time when I'm walking up these stairs. This asthma is starting to trigger again. I just want to lose a good 10 pounds, but, you know? So yes, I think that it's awesome that I am healthy and I'm whole and I'm trying my best to take care of myself, because I want other people who are HIV positive or living with an AIDS diagnosis to want to do the same thing. And it has to be something embedded within themselves. They have to want it. And I also want to continue to be positive about my approach of living with HIV, because I want people who are negative to know that we still need you. Even if we're silent about our status, we still need you to be supportive. We need you to still show us love and be mindful of the fact that just because we're not hearing about it as much doesn't mean it's not here.
May Sonia Traylor and Linda Blunt, I want to thank both of you. These guests have been here on behalf of the Black Women's Health Imperative, and they will be working in Atlanta for the next few weeks. You can learn more about their outreach at letstalkaboutprep.com. And again, I want to thank Linda Blunt, the president and CEO of the Black Women's Health Imperative, and Ms. Maysonia Traylor, who shared with us so much information about her positive status. Thank you so much, ladies.